god of hellfire, and I bring you
fire.
Burning. Most of us breeze right by this mystery if we think about it at all, assuming it's tidily explained in a book somewhere, and we could look it up if we wanted to, but yawn, why bother? Yet this is a vital question about the nature of matter. Someone had to answer it in the first place, with no book to look in except that written in fire itself. Imagine a branch cut from a tree. What is happening as brown-green flesh sputters into red and yellow flame? What is that radiance building deep in the center, held only by a blackened memory of once strong wood? What is the heat, released in waves so thick they can be seen as well as felt, although they have no color or standing form? And finally, when the heat is finished, having consumed sap, flesh, even itself, what is this flimsy corpse which touched collapses to a little black powder? What is burning? By what means has all that is moist and cold been converted into hot, dry dust? Pondering these questions in 1697, Ernst Stahl wrote that burning materials give off a substance called phlogiston, from the Greek for fire. All very well, but that raises a new question. If phlogiston goes out of wood, or candle wax, or oil, or animal flesh, it has to go into something else, some substance desperately lacking in phlogiston that promotes burning by drawing the phlogiston out. 100 years later, in the 1770s, Carl Steel, a Swede, first solved the mystery. He identified a kind of air that promotes fierce burning. He called it fire air. However, Scheele was not particularly fiery himself and sat on his discovery for over 5 years. Meanwhile, in England, Joseph Priestley also solved the mystery, identifying the same air. This was it, a substance so parched for phlogiston it drained living materials dry, leaving mere ash. Fire air, the breath of fire. We now call it oxygen. Modern chemistry says that oxygen promotes fire because it is hungry for electrons, not phlogiston. But phlogiston or electrons, oxygen has the same effect on others. It doesn't burn itself, but in its presence, a little heat becomes a great conflagration and everything is consumed. Priestley was as incendiary as his discovery, not with his science. That was of no interest to mobs of common folk. It was his liberal, Unitarian religious views that flamed his neighbors. He commonly ranted against cherished orthodoxy, and in response, a mob stormed his home and destroyed it, although Priestley escaped across the Atlantic into religious-tolerant Pennsylvania. Of course, that's not so bad as what happened to Lavoisier, a French chemist who doubted the phlogiston theory, and by careful weighing showed that there is no phlogiston. Only the matter that burns, the ash and oxygen. The French Revolution mobs didn't simply run him off, however. They removed his head. Although they were maddened by his privileged position as a tax collector, not his oxygen theory. But it is obviously dangerous stuff, oxygen, not to be lightly toyed with, despite its metaphorical reputation for supporting growth and harmony. They were great inflamers, Priestley and Lavoisier, like oxygen.
I am the only one of burning desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Lightning cracked across the sky like veins on the back of you. It reached a fiery finger out as if in reprimand and torched a crippled cottonwood that leaned against the sky, while grass and sagebrush hunkered down that hellish hot July. The cottonwood exploded and shot its flaming seeds like comets into kerosene, igniting all the weeds. The air was thick as dog's breath when the fire's feet hit the ground. It licked its pyrogenic lips, and then it looked around. The prairie lay defenseless in the pathway of the beast. It seemed to search the further hills and pointed to the east and then charged. Like some blind arsonist, some heathen hell on wheels with his felonous companion, the wind, hot on his heel. The varmints ran like lemmings in the shadow of the flame. While high above, a red-tailed hawk flew circles taking aim. He spied a frazzled prairie dog and banked into a dive, but the stoker saw him coming and fried them both alive. Slid across the surface like a molten oil slick. It ran down prey and predator, the quiet and the quick. The killdee couldn't pick it. It was cinders in a flash. The bones of all who faced it soon lay smoking in the ash. The antelope and cricket, the rattlesnake and bee, the butterfly and badger, the coyote and the flea. It was faster than the rabbit, faster than the fawn. They danced inside the dragon's mouth like puppets, and then they're gone. It offered up no quarter and burned for 7 days. 100,000 acres were consumed within the blaze. Brave men came out to kill it, cutting trail after trail, but it jumped their puny fire breaks and scattered them like quail. It was ugly from a distance, and uglier up close. So said the men who saw the greasy belly of the ghost. It made them cry for mama. Melted tracks on D8 cat. Sucked the sweat right off their back and broke their thermostats. It was hotter than a burning brake. It was heavy as a train. It was louder than the nightmare screams of Abel's brother Cain. It was war with nature's fury unleashed upon the land. Uncontrollable, enormous, it held the upper hand. The men retrenched repeatedly, continuously bested. And then finally, on the seventh day, like Genesis, it rested. The black-faced firefighters stared, unable to believe. They watched the little wisps of smoke, mistrusting their reprieve. They knew they hadn't beaten it. They knew beyond a doubt. Though Newsbreak told it different, they knew it just went out. Must have tired of devastation. Grew jaded to the fame. Simply bored to death of Holocaust. And walked out of the game. Well, you can tell yourself, that's crazy. Hey, fire's not a living thing. It's only chance combustion. There's no malice in the sting. You can go to sleep unworried, knowing man is in control. That these little freaks of nature have no evil in their soul. But rest assured, it's out there. And the powder's always primed, and it will be back, you know it. It's only biding time till the range turns into kindling, and the grass turns into thatch, and a fallen angel tosses out a solitary match. I'm living for giving the devil his due. And
Cal Fire Information Center with the fire situation report. Over the weekend, firefighters across the state were busy with a handful of fires. In Los Angeles County, the Crown Fire that charred nearly 14,000 acres outside Palmdale power grid and communication infrastructure. Four other large wildfires continue to burn today. The Bull Fire down in Kern County.
We just want to make sure that we have the resources available. Obviously, you know, you always can use more resources because, I mean, how many times do you have 700 fires or more than 700 fires? So I think the important thing, as everyone here would tell you, is to put out the fires around here in this area as quick as possible so we can move resources into other areas.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Over 36,000 hectares of Russian forest is currently ablaze. There are 900 large-scale fires continuing to rage across the Far East, Siberia, and the Urals. In the past 24 hours, 76 new fires started, doubling the affected area. Strong winds and a long spell of dry and warm weather are cited as the main reasons for the wildfires. But locals often set fire to dry grass to clear land for farming and other purposes.
Today they are burning the prairie, spreading a blanket of fire over last year's blue stem and blazing star, wrapping it about the bases of the bur oaks, smoothing it over knoll and flatland, tucking its edges in carefully, and squaring the corners. It is a kindness, not a punishment, this act. Prairie plants are rooted so deep they laugh at flames, and the soft, black coverlet left behind will warm in the waxing sunshine and nurture new green life beneath its comforting darkness. Come back in a week. You'll see.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
The forest fires and scorching temperatures are now complicating operations for Russia's large and aging nuclear sector. At the secretive Sarov Atomic Research Center, more than 2,000 firefighters are battling to control flames. Robots and planes are being used to reach many inaccessible areas in Russia's vast woodlands, the world's biggest. Thick clouds of acrid, choking smoke from forest and peat bog fires are blanketing several regions. It's forced authorities to order people to stay indoors despite the sweltering heat to avoid concentrations of toxic carbon monoxide well above safe levels.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
The Russian Emergencies Minister is warning of radiation risks as wildfires get closer to the area affected by the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. The fear is that it could disturb the contamination in the ground and spread it wider.
So there's a concern because the fires are heading south. And there is a region in the south called Bryansk, which was affected by the Chernobyl catastrophe. And the soil there is contaminated. And the worry is, if the fires reach the forest there and burn up the contaminated soil, the winds could pick it up and put it in the air.
Fires are up there. There is a risk that radionuclides can be released into the air with other combustion gases, and more areas could become contaminated.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
The dry grass crackled underfoot, was dang near stirrup high. The horse and rider left awake as they went riding by. Their shadow swam beneath the horse, no elbows sticking out. The hoppers thick as dirt road dust, the prairie sick with drought. No cattle in this section piece, they stayed down by the creek. The rider only rode to see how bad it was this week. Due east across the grassy sea, he rode with squinting eyes, no cloud to break the baking heat. But then, to his surprise, the slightest shadow fell across the ground on either side. He stirred from somnolent thought, from so horrific ride. His senses came alert, and he sat straighter in the seat. The blue sky had a pinkish tinge, and then he felt the heat. He swung his horse back to the west and saw the wall of flame. The god of fire was hot to trot and back to stake his claim. It felt like his whole head caved in as blood drained from his brains. The fist of fear that gripped his heart squeezed dread into his veins. They wheeled as one, and in two jumps were flying across the plain. They ran flat out for near a mile, but hardly did they gain, for now the fire was like a mob that fed upon its own, self-conflagrating cannibals, cremating flesh and bone. The smoke was in his horse's nose. The fear was in his eyes. The froth blew off his heaving flanks and soon was vaporized. A hole, a hump, a hidden clump, whatever, jammed the gear. The horse went down like he'd been shot. The rider landed clear. The flames hung down like curtains there behind the fallen horse. The beast was struggling to his feet. The wind was gaining force. The rider dug a wooden match from out his sweaty shirt and struck it on his zippered fly, then reached down to the dirt and lit a clump of tender grass without a second thought. In moments, with a steady breeze, the helpless prairie caught. The horse, in panic, tried to run but couldn't bear his weight. His right hind packed up under him. The rider didn't wait. He peeled his shirt off with a tug and quickly tied a blind around the faunching horse's head to try and calm his mind. The spot he'd lit was fanning out, but in its wake lay bare a blackened, smoking patch of ground that beckoned to the pair. With coaxing, pulling, pounding will, he danced the horse around until they stumbled through the ring and stood on burnt-off ground. He jerked his rope down from the horn, and talking all the time, he sidelined up the good hind foot to drop him on the dime, then pulled him down and dallied up, and somehow with the rest reached down and looped the left front foot and pulled it to his chest. He looked up at the raging fire that towered overhead. The wind that beat hard on his face now pressed his back instead. The fire was sucking oxygen to feed its hungry forge. The backdraft fueled the dragon's flame that bore down on St. George. With nylon rope and reins in hand, the rider cuddled near. He lay beside the stricken horse and sang into its ear. "He's little Joe, the Wrangler boys." The fire became a roar. It rose up like a cobra's hood. "He'll wrangle nevermore." The sky turned black. "An okay spur on one foot lightly hung." The devil's furnace set on high, but still the cowboy sung. "The boss, he cut him out a mount." Like bugs caught in a yawn, they lay in the volcano's throat. "And kindly put him on." Surrounded by a ring of fire, they clung to their domain. Two captives on a railroad track beneath a passing train. "He's riding old Blue Rocket with a slicker o'er his head." The peak of the inferno was enough to wake the dead. The rider tugged the shirt on down to wrap the horse's nose, his voice raw. He whispered, sang, and kept his own eyes closed. "But one of us was missing, boys." By now he'd worn a groove. Together there, just mouth to ear, the pony never moved. "Next morning, just at daybreak." Then the wind began to turn. The rider felt a different breeze. His cheeks began to burn. "Beneath him, mashed into a pulp." Still trapped in his own hell, the rider croaked his scraping dirge. His spur had rung the knell. How long he held the horse's head, no one could really know. And on he sang. "Our little Texas stray, poor Wrangler Joe." The pilot finally spotted him and radioed the ground. The boys who reached him in the truck weren't sure what they had found. The horse was laying on his side, his head pointing north. The rider hunkered over him, just rocking back and forth. The T-shirt burnt clean off his back, his bare head fairly scorched. The horse's hair was singed like wool, his mane and tail torched. The pair smelled like a Brandon fire. But what disturbed the boys was coming from the rider's lips. A scratchy, humming noise, a raspy, ragged lullaby that carried on the air and slithered up their prickled necks and held them frozen there. Before them grinned the face of death, the earth, its skin unpeeled, the world consumed by fire this time, apocalypse revealed. But beating in this ruined place, two hearts somehow prevailed and hung in balance by a thread. A sigh could tip the scales, and then Jim eased up, like you would do a spooky colt, perhaps, and touched him with an outstretched hand. The rider just collapsed. This tale was told in countless camps where killing time's the rule. Some say the rider was insane and babbling like a fool. But Jim, who reached the rider first, was haunted his life long with Little Joe the Wrangler. But who knows? It's just a song.
He's Little Joe the Wrangler. He'll wrangle nevermore. His days with the Ramuda, they are o'er. 'Twas a year ago, last April, when he rode into our camp. Just a little Texas stray and all alone.
I must say, if there's one thing I can do really good, is build really good fires. I can build a fire on a winter's day when everything's wet. And come out here where there's only one dead tree. Keep a fire going for hours. Nice, even, crackling, warm fire.
See? On the first day of spring, the vernal equinox, I do this ritual. I go out into the closest woods to me, depending on where I live, and I start the first fire of the new season.
That's a tough one.
I'm not really sure why I do this exactly, or at that, how many years I've been doing it. Maybe 10 or 12 now, but it's like my gift. My welcoming of warmer weather. My confirmation of the fact that I made it through another long, cold winter. My vernal equinox celebratory fire is very ritualistic, actually. I gather small sticks and twigs and pine needles from all four directions of the fire pit. Gather from the north, then from the east, from the south, and then the west. I create a little piece of art in the center. And I always do my best to create the first fire as pure as possible. No paper. And matches. Some of the past year's fires were not easy to start, especially the ones created in the northern states. With the melting snow and wet grounds, my ritual a few times took hours to get started. But I never quit. And this all ties perfectly into the meaning of my little ritual. Because to me, the first day of spring is the new year. That's where it all begins for me. And the effort I put into making that first fire of the new year reminds me that I must keep trying. Persevere. Work harder. Knowing the reward which comes from it. It reminds me to keep the spirit free of senseless traffic. To keep the mind burning, bright, and warm. You, oh warm one, who had most likely everything to do with our ongoing existence. You who kept the body warm and the food cooked in days of old where there was no convenience of central heat. You who cleansed the spirits of those who occupied the land known as America before its rape by the settlers. You who retained warmth to the souls of the weary on a long winter's hunt for food and shelter. You whose origin we do not even have written record of. An ode to you, O powerful and dangerous one, which only the respectful and honest now reap the benefit of. You. It's to you, your life within yourself, whom I relentlessly tend to give me exercise and heat and light and relaxation. You who, though not necessary, cooks my meal and keeps my mind occupied in times of dismay. You who I escape to and secretly wish for the times when you were all humankind had to survive. Here's to you.
It's nice and warm.
Untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, yeah, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. Hesitation's true. There's no time to wallow in the mire. Darling, we could only lose, and our love become a funeral fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire.